Well, the Park City Board of Education looking for community input as it updates the district's strategic plan. That input session will be held tomorrow night, 6 o'clock at the school district office. In the studio with a preview, I have school board members Andrew Kappel along with Ann Peters. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Ann, let's start with you. Apparently, this is one of your strengths, building strategic plans. Can you just talk a little bit about what a strategic plan is and why the district needs one?
Sure. So a strategic plan is identifies our mission, our vision, our values, and our goals. And it's the prelude to master planning, which informs facilities. We are not starting over. We've actually picked up where the work left off last year. So there's been a ton of work that's been done in the community, and we thank everyone for their input. So we just went through all of the data points. There was a ton of it, and came up with values that we heard the community say they appreciated and valued. We took those five, I call them buckets, but they're really values, and we took them back out to the community to see if they still held true, if there's anything they wanted to add, and we'll wrap that up next week.
Yeah, so the strategic plan we have now just doesn't, isn't right for this community, or?
No, it just needs to be updated. I don't think it's been worked on since
it's about 7 or 8 years since the last one was published, and so it's been a process, as Ann mentioned, that's been ongoing really since 2015 when the bond failed. And this is this process is a refresh, and we're hoping to finalize in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Do you feel like values have changed? I mean, it seems like we've always wanted, I mean, when I kind of look at the list of things, I mean, we've always wanted good academic engagement, communication, leadership, accountability.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think they've changed much. We're just refining them, putting a sort of a refinement and a tighter lens on them, and also to reach out and say, okay, it's been a while. Are there any things that we want to add in? We've also done outreach. We're in the process of doing outreach to the Latino community through Eric at the district office. I think you were at the tail end of the night of the 2nd. We opened that up to the community. We had a Latino table, and Eric was there to translate, and we didn't have a turnout at all. So we've decided we need to reach out differently to them. So we want to include their thoughts. We also heard from the community they wanted breakout sessions, so teachers alone with us, admin alone with us, and parents.
Yeah, and a number of meetings were held last week. Can you tell us what you heard? And this was really specifically with schools and staff members?
Yeah, we met, I think, Monday night. That one I was not at, but we met Friday at Parley's with the teachers and Wednesday, I believe, with admin. And it's great. Again, nothing's really revolutionary. Everybody's just adding more input, refinements on what it means, better ways to do things. So for us, we've got probably 8 or 10 documents of just notes that we're going to sort through, filter into these overarching buckets, and see if we come up with anything that's new.
Yeah. So what were some of the things they were talking about?
You know, communication. They're all very excited that we have Melinda, and we're working on communication, just tips and ideas on how to refine it. Everybody's super busy. They don't have hours to spend. Give me the sound bites. Clear communication, which we're working on. You know, the personnel, we talked a lot about that in the hiring process, which is something that we're working on.
Yeah, and that's a shared interest, obviously, with teachers and admin, as well as us as a board and the community. I mean, there's really – it's great to hear all the different perspectives on that, right? So when we have one of our values is excellent personnel, and what that means to each of these groups is slightly different, but it's certainly a shared interest, and there was a lot of feedback around that. And one of the other items that came out from the Monday meeting with the teachers was a lot around kind of shared responsibility for attendance at schools. And if we're talking about academic engagement, how attendance and fits into that. And it's a concern from a lot of teachers, especially on the secondary side, with chronic absenteeism. And that's a national trend, and it's something that we're looking at along with the United Way, who's a partner of ours, who's done a lot of work on that. And absenteeism, especially in the early years, is a great predictor of future academic success or not. But I think as a district, it's something that we should look at.
Do we know why kids aren't coming?
There's a host of different reasons. Sometimes, parents are pulling out around vacations. Sometimes there's other issues. We used to have truancy officer. That's no longer the case. And so we're going to look at it. It's been brought up to us a number of times. And, you know, again, along with the academic engagement piece, you know, we want our students to be engaged and to be there at school learning. And if they're not there, then it's obviously impossible for them to learn. So, but that was, you know, I only bring that up because it was a highlight from our secondary teachers meeting.
And all of that goes back to the nucleus of this, which is the whole child, the student-centered, safe, healthy, challenge-supported, and engaged child. I mean, that is why we're here. That's what these filters or tenets or values inform, is how we do that the best that we possibly can. So these are sort of the filters that we'll pass everything through.
Yeah, one of the headlines I heard this morning, some study that had been done showing the amount of stress the teachers are facing. Mm-hmm. Have you heard at all from your staff about?
Yeah, a tremendous amount. We heard a lot about that actually when we were in negotiations over the contracts for the licensed professional agreement, as well as salary negotiations. And it's interesting because you know, we've asked our teachers to do more and more and more, and you know, we're obviously not giving them a ton more resource, but I think a huge part of it as well is that teachers, you know, used to be working from, you know, when they got in till when they left in the day, and maybe got, you know, then they went home and corrected papers. But now with email, students are emailing teachers at all hours, literally all hours. And teachers feel an obligation, you know, as we all do now with email, to be on all the time. And I think it's part of a larger issue in society with email and, you know, being on all the time. But, you know, we heard a lot of feedback from them about that. And I think that's, you know, as we look at mental health for students, we've also heard requests from our staff about mental health for teachers, right? And helping deal with whether it's an acute tragedy or whether it's just kind of the day-to-day that we're asking them to do. I mean, it's a stressful job.
And the trickle-down, too, from the teacher. We heard that last week, the trickle-down from the teacher to the student. I'm sure they feel it. I'm sure they're impacted. And on Friday, I was really thrilled to hear this. They talked about mindfulness. Why don't we infuse some of that into the school? Because everybody's so busy, and to Andrew's point, we're layering on. But what about getting back to that whole child, that total child? Mindfulness is a part of that as well. So we're taking it all.
Yeah. Do you foresee some kind of policy, though, perhaps? I mean, in terms of, you know, when, because I know the whole email question, and it's like sometimes you just have to set your own boundaries. I mean, is there some way that the...
Well, you can. I mean, there's certain places, you know, in the world where culturally they've said, okay, after a certain period of time, there's no more work email, right? And you're not allowed to send an email or read one after 8 p.m. or whatever it is. And, you know, we could look at things like that. You know, it was kind of discussed briefly, you know, during our negotiations. And I think that's something we can bring up with the PCEA going forward. I mean, it's a tough one, right? Because teachers always want to help the kids. And all kids have different schedules, and all kids get around to studying or questions at different times. And so it's a tough one, right? Because I think our teachers are so dedicated that they feel an obligation to help kids at all times a day. And it's just tough. You know, it's a really tough question. And I think it's something that we're willing to look at, but I'm not sure there's an easy solution to that one.
Talk to me a little bit about, you had mentioned earlier, Anne, about the outreach to our Hispanic community or Latino community. What does that look like?
So after the night of the second, when we, you know, had the whole table set up and nobody showed up, I spent a good bit of time with Eric just at the district office talking about how do we include this. And, you know, we talked about the differences and the communication difference. So we decided that his outreach partners will go out to the communities, out to the schools, and speak with the families. They already have a tremendous amount of information and knowledge already, and distill that down into what they're thinking about, what's important to them, and how they feel about these five values, and are there any other things that we should include so that we ensure that their voice is also heard and incorporated.
All right. And then one of the themes is leadership accountability, holding everyone, no matter their position or status, accountable for their actions. We know with you, school board members, elections do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what about for then the administrative staff? I mean, the school board then holds them accountable?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we hold Dr. Conley directly accountable. Obviously, that's our remit. We have kind of three remits. One is policy, one is budget, and the other is the superintendent and business administrator. And so, you know, through holding our superintendent and our business administrator accountable. You know, they hold their direct reports accountable, and that includes everyone in the district office as well as the building principals. And so that's kind of how it works, right? The community holds the five of us accountable. We hold the administration accountable. They hold teachers accountable, and that's the way it should work in an ideal world.
Yeah, and I also note as one of the themes that you're hearing that what the staff wants are clear processes, procedures that are transparent, free of favoritism, by the book, and available for everybody to see. That's not happening now.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because we're looking at policy quite a bit, and we're in a hole in terms of policy and what we should have done and what we do have done, and we're probably about a year behind. And so we're trying to dig ourselves out of that. But a lot of that is things that, you know, just making refreshing policy that hasn't been looked at for 5-10 years, updating it. You know, we're a bigger district now than we were 10 years ago. We have more employees. We're hiring more. We're doing a lot of things. And a lot of those processes just need refreshes and updates. And the staff is right. There wasn't a lot of transparency, and there's definitely a need for that. So we're looking at it as a board.
Mm-hmm. So once completed, what does this strategic plan, I mean, how is it implemented, or what is it going to do? Does it drive everything else moving forward?
Yeah, it drives everything else moving forward. We'll begin the master planning process in January. Mm-hmm. And as an interim, we have something called community identity, or faceting, where we take everything that we heard in strategic, and it's almost a prelude to master planning so that we can get our arms around the district, the needs of the district. Having been out in the community, this is an amazing place. I mean, it is so diverse. There are incredible people here. I think we just really need to wrap our arms around who's here and what we need for our students, and then launch into master planning.
So what is it that you'd like to hear from the public tomorrow?
Anything they'd like to tell us.
All the work we've done so far is up on the front page of the website, so they can review that. If they'd like to, you know, come and speak to us in that format, they're welcome to. If they feel more comfortable with a phone call or an email, they're also welcome to do that. You know, one of the pieces of feedback we've had is that people are somewhat uncomfortable talking in a mixed audience. And so, you know, we're making ourselves available to everyone at any time, you know, in any media. We're here, and we're willing to listen, and we're going to take that input and use it in moving forward.
All right. So the email is communication@pcschools.us. I guess that gets forwarded to you.
Yeah, yes. That goes to all of us.
All right. And then this will be wrapped up then by the end of the year?
This will be wrapped up, the strategic portion, by the 7th. Yep. We'll be presenting everything. Yep. On the 7th of November.
Oh, yeah. So it's a finished plan at that point?
It is a finished plan at that point.
Okay. And then you said the master planning itself then will begin after the new year?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about you've got a board member, Julie Eihausen, who is leaving the board a few months earlier than her term. Tell me about the process for that. You've got some applications? Or?
Sure, yeah. So applications are due November 2nd at 4:30 at the district office. You know, we have a number of interested parties, and we hope that anyone who has any interest reaches out to one of the board members or the district to get more information. We've had a couple information sessions. We're happy to reach out one-to-one if anyone has any questions or they're interested. So the applications are due November 2nd. Interviews will be held November 7th at our board meeting at 9 a.m. The new member will be elected on November 21st at a regular session at 4 p.m.
So they would start well before, because Julie had said she was going to stay through
January. Well, Julie's staying through February 5th, but what we wanted to do is get the new member in place so that they can start to learn, you know, before Julie steps down. So we would hope that the member can come to all of our board meetings, sit in on all of our meetings, committee meetings, things like that, before they're sworn in when Julie steps down.
All right. And again, this is the district. I don't know what the number of the district is.
It's District 5. And it's Summit Park, Pine Brook. Again, that's on the front page of our website as well at the district. If you're wondering if you're in that district, it's the map is there, but essentially Summit Park and Pine Brook.
Okay. Anything else?
No. That's it.
Okay. Ann Peterson, Andrew Kaplan, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Leslie.
Well, save the date on November 3rd. Canines with a Cause will be honoring the military and bringing awareness to the organization's efforts to help veterans with PTSD and rescue shelter dogs. In the studio with details, I have Kathy King with Canines with a Cause, along with Katie Stelflu with Arctic in Camas. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So maybe, Kathy, you begin by telling us what Canines with a Cause is.
Canines with a Cause is a nonprofit dedicated to rescuing dogs from shelters and pairing them with people who would benefit from having a comfort dog or a service dog. We focus on veterans. We have a great working relationship with the VA, so all of our clients are referred through the VA as benefiting from having a dog. So the process works that we rescue the dogs from shelters after evaluating them. They go to the women's prison where they live and train with inmates. And once they pass a good canine citizen test, then they get to start coming to class and working with different veterans until they find their perfect match. And then the dog is adopted and they continue training to whatever level of training the vet requires. We also train dogs for children who have had trauma. We place them through different children's justice centers, Valley Mental Health. And also we have dogs at the Chateau. We have been studying the effect of dogs on recovery. So this Friday we'll be focusing on our veterans. We have Veterans Day coming up. So this event will create awareness about post-traumatic stress disorder and its effect on our military.
Yeah. How does a dog, though, help with PTSD?
They help in a lot of different ways. One of the first things we see is the vets start sleeping at night. Most of our veterans are taking Ambien because they're of just flashbacks, things that they've seen that come back, and that's usually when they're sleeping. Also anxiety, hypervigilance and anxiety are key elements of post-traumatic stress disorder. So the dogs make them feel safe. They know they can go to sleep, and the dog will alert them if something happens. If they're in public and they start having attacks or flashbacks, the dogs will help calm them down, move them out of a crowd, lick their face, bark, whatever they need to do to really get them back into the now. One of the problems with PTSD is when you have something that triggers a very bad memory, and this is really most traumas are like this. You have something that will trigger a memory, and that's where you go mentally. You go back to that place, and the dogs can really help them stay in the now. So, and you know, more so than anything, they're just loving companions, as we all know how good they make us feel.
Yeah. So are there better breeds than others that you found working with the vets?
You know, not really. It really depends on what they're looking for. Some people like a small dog. They live in a small home and they really don't want to go anywhere and they want Buddy to sit around and watch television. And others are busy, so they're more of a border collie, heeler, running type. It just kind of depends upon the dog's personality and, you know, what they're looking for in a companion.
All right. So who do you – you say you work with the Veterans Administration then?
We do. We work directly through the VA. All of our clients are referred on the basis that if something happens, we do have a safety net because most veterans who are going to the VA stay in close contact with their therapist. So if something is wrong, maybe they have to go into a hospital or they're struggling, then we know that we can help them and support them with the dog, maybe take the dog while they get – you know, needed medical help. It's just a way of keeping in touch with them on what's going on.
Yeah, and then what do the women at the women prisoners do?
We have actually five inmates that have been with us for over 3 years, and they're absolutely amazing trainers. And what they're doing now is training the new inmates that are coming in that are wanting to get in the program. So it's awesome for us because we have built-in trainers who really get the program. But they assess the dogs, number one, for behavior. They can tell us usually within 5 to 6 weeks if the dog is going to suit the program or not. If they don't, they go into our penitentiary pups program, which is an adoption program. We offer the dogs to the public, and the beauty there is that they have been assessed. We know behaviors. We know what they like and they don't like. Otherwise, they stay in the program and continue training with the women until they reach good canine citizen. At that point, they get to start coming to class.
So where do the dogs go, though? Because the women don't get to keep the dogs in the cell with
them. They do.
Oh, they do?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're in a 10-by-7 cell with a toilet, a desk, and a dog crate. So it's pretty cramped quarters. But, yeah, they live. In fact, if you drive by the Bluffdale Prison and you look over on any given day, you'll see dogs out in the yard. So, yes, they live there.
Yeah. So the prisoners are actually chosen to be trainers then as well.
They
earn that, I guess.
They earn it, and it's something that they will lose with bad behavior. So, you know, it's great for the prison because a lot of these women really try and do their best and not fight and do other things they shouldn't be doing so they can stay in the program. And to them, you know, a lot of these women have kids they're never going to see again. Most of the women in our program are doing life sentences. So to have a dog to love and nurture is really a big deal for them. And it's a way of giving back. You know, they have nothing better to do than sit and think about everything bad they've done in their lives. So for them to have this redemption of being able to train a dog for a veteran as shelter dog, it really means a lot to them.
Okay, so Katie, what's happening at Artique then on November 3rd as part of this?
Well, it's our first Friday event, and so we just, you know, we had worked with Kathy and Canines with the cause a few years ago and just wanted to, again, raise awareness for PTSD in the military and honor our military, just being close to Veterans Day. We're going to just have a celebration and hopefully have a few people there that have been part of the program and actually a local gentleman in Camas that has a service dog currently. And, you know, I think it's just raising awareness because so many people don't really know how to react around a service dog either. And he can't leave his home without the dog. And so, and he's actually become a motivational speaker. And so he may tell his story on Friday night as well. So,
okay. So it's happening 6 to 9?
6 to 9. Yep.
Okay.
Friday, November 3rd.
All right. Anything inside that you're featuring?
Well, we'll have a few items that artists have specifically made kind of geared towards dogs, little pet beds and some jewelry with vintage dog tags, barnwood, American flags and stars. So we have some kind of themed items as well.
All right. And then you're also given a percentage of some proceeds then to Kathy's
program? Yeah. So part of the proceeds of the sales that night will go to Canines with a Cause.
Okay. Anything else we should let people know about?
Well, according to the VA, there are quite a few veterans living in Sumner Wasatch County. So I'm really hoping that we can do something special for them. You know, I just feel like having an event like this where they can come out and actually meet other veterans and talk about, you know, their experiences would be a really important thing.
And we hope that people come out and bring people that have been in the military, whether or if they've been affected by people in the military. I mean, I currently have a sister-in-law that's deployed, and I think all of us are affected by military service members.
Okay, that's this Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. at Artique at 283 North Main Street. Hey, right. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, you.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:39. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Girls Giving Fund for the Park City Community Foundation was launched this past June by 12-year-old Paige Rock and her 10 founding member. Paige joins me now in the studio to tell us more about the fund. She's joined by Lauren Vitulli, the Women's Giving Fund Mentoring Specialist. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Paige, let's start with you, and you can tell us a little bit more about what is the Girls Giving Fund.
The Girls Giving Fund is a nonprofit made up of school-aged girls to give back to Park City.
Okay. So where did you get the idea?
My mom came back from the first Women's Giving Fund grant giving, and she was so inspired that she wanted me to get involved. I thought it would be a good thing to have girls in my community give back themselves, not their parents. So I started the Girls Giving Fund.
Okay, so what did you do? Just find some girlfriends?
Yeah, I took 10 of my closest friends and their founding members and then asked them to all get 10 members also. So then that would create 100 members. So.
And so you already have 100 members now?
No, we have almost 80 girls and then, yeah.
Okay. So with the Women's Giving Fund, it was 1,000 women giving $1,000. You're looking for 100 girls giving $100?
Yes.
So that's pretty impressive. I mean, to save up, is it just from allowance? Or, I mean, how are the girls raising the money?
I just think it would be, you know, nice just to, it doesn't have to be like their own money, their own money, mm-hmm. but it does. They can, like, raise it using babysitting or just anything. Yeah.
Okay. So this goes, the Women's Giving Fund, the members vote on and decide where the money goes to. How do you guys decide where the money goes to?
We do it just like the Women's Giving Fund. You can either go to the website or go to the Park City Community Foundation and do it.
All right. So when will that happen? Because if you just started in June, do you have to wait a year before you?
Like, when are we going to give it back? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to give it at the Women's Giving Fund holiday party on December 4th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Do you have some people who have applied to receive the money?
Yeah, we have EATS, PC Tots, Youth Sports Alliance, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and Holy Cross Ministries.
Okay. So did they have to apply to you for the money or?
No, we chose it.
Mm-hmm.
So we narrowed it down to 5 nonprofits that support kids in Park City, and then all the members will vote on one of those 5. And we're going to give a grant up to $5,000 to them, and then we'll continue each year the same thing. We'll continue to get new members and continue to raise money. So it's rolling. So we've already raised about $8,000. So we'll give $5,000 away this year, and then next year, hopefully, we'll be able to give another $5,000.
Okay. And then the money is being worked through the Community Foundation then, Lauren?
Right. So the Community Foundation is managing the money to make sure that everything is done appropriately, legally, and that this is well-run and professional like any other foundation.
All right. And like the Women's Giving Foundation, they have holiday socials, they've got ski days. Are you girls doing anything?
Yeah, we volunteered at the EATS Farm to Table event, and we ran the lemonade stand, and then we went to, like, parades and also did lemonade stands there to also raise money. And then this past weekend, we just had a witch's brew, and, yeah, each girl would bring their mom, and then it was really fun.
Yeah, sounds like it, yeah. So if somebody's interested in joining the Girls Giving Fund, what do they need to do?
They can either donate online, I think, and they join that way, or they could go to the Park City Community Foundation and go there.
Okay, and is that, there's some link then, Lauren, for the Girls Giving Fund?
The Girls Giving Fund website is under the Park City Community Foundation website, which is parkcitycf.org / Girls Giving Fund.
Okay. Well, we've got you here then. What else are you working on as kind of the mentoring director?
So I'm the Women's Giving Fund mentoring mm-hmm. coordinator, and that's part of the, it's one of the projects of the Park City Community Foundation. And the mentoring program focuses on 6th and 7th grade girls. So this was the Girls Giving Fund was a perfect fit for the mentoring program. We do power lunches at Ecker Hill Middle School where we bring speakers in to talk about their careers while weaving in life lessons. It's been really successful. We get about 200 girls at each power lunch, and we do that 10 to 12 times a year. We're also working on a contest at Ecker Hill that is around this year's education theme of health and safety. And we continue to partner with Park City Film Series on important documentaries. And couple weeks ago, we showed She Started It, which was a really successful event. And I just want to say that we so appreciate the grant from Vail Epic Promise to make all of this possible. So one other thing that I'm working on personally that ties into the Park City Community Foundation, the Joseph James Morelli Foundation is near and dear to my heart. So I'm helping the Morellis raise awareness for the foundation that gives scholarships to students with learning disabilities, particularly dyslexia. It's only one of the many nonprofits that are doing great work in our community. And the Park City Community Foundation does so much to educate and support all of the Park City nonprofits. And one of our major programs that has a huge impact on Park City is Live PC, Give PC. And that's coming up in just 2 weeks. So on November 10th, I hope everybody will go to livepcgivepc.org and give generously to your favorite nonprofit. It's how we can all show our support and appreciation for all of the nonprofits that do so much to make Park City such a great place.
Yeah. And I just, because I had seen some photos. I mean, you had mentioned like the girls' power lunches that you help organize, but you also recently had a boys' power lunch because they had requested it. So tell me a little bit about that. A bunch of boys showed up for it.
The boys had been telling me that they wanted a power lunch, actually screaming at me. And then one boy came up to me during a girls' power lunch and said, you know, boys need mentoring too. And we would really like that. And you could have the same women speak. And we had already been thinking about doing boys' power lunches. And I was thinking we would have men speak to them. After that, I decided that it would be really powerful to have strong women talk to the boys. So we recently had Tommy Lee, Tilly Gill, speak to the boys about leadership. And we had 200 boys show up, and they were engaged. They really heard the message, and we get comment cards from them. So we know that they did. So we're going to continue to do a couple boys' power lunches a year, and also we'll continue with the women's power lunches. Our next power lunch is Wednesday, November 1st. We have Terry Sidford speaking about her career as in medical sales and as an author, and she'll be weaving in the theme of courage. And the next power lunch is going to be Ember Connolly. That is in November 29th. And December 13th, we have Summer Sanders speaking about what it takes and to be a gold medalist and the power of community.
Okay, great lineup. Paige, we'll look forward to hearing about how the Girls Giving Fund goes then in December. Good job.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:48. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, one of Main Street's favorite events is Halloween, when a portion of the streets close to make a pedestrian-friendly area for a little trick-or-treaters. And Halloween Dog Parade in the studio with details from Park City Municipal, Jenny Dearson, along with Misha Lawson, from the Historic Park City Alliance. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So, Misha, why don't we start with you and just give us the details. We've got a street closure happening. We've got trick-or-treating happening. When?
Yeah, definitely. So the street closes tomorrow at 2 p.m. We definitely ask for all cars to be off the road by 2 p.m. And trick-or-treaters really kick off at 3 p.m. Trick-or-treating goes really until people run out of candy. And generally, we like to say until 5 p.m., but I don't think it actually lasts that long. So we do, get here close to 3, but try not to get here earlier than 3 because we're not really ready for you then. And then at 5 p.m., a couple years ago, we moved the dog parade to Lower Main Street, which is really allowed that event to be a little bit more organized and provided an opportunity for the dogs to actually parade rather than just sort of mingle and mix with all of the kids. So we start that exactly at 5 p.m. And that starts down below the Town Lift Bridge. So right there on Lower Main Street, right where the bridge crosses over from the Town Lift Plaza over to kind of Prime and Collies in those areas. And they go up into Heber Avenue, and that's kind of where they start to fall apart a little bit. And they are led by thriller dancers from the Park City Mark. So that, again, starts at 5 p.m. So 3 p.m. kiddos, 5 p.m. dogs.
All right. So be at 5 p.m. with your dog at underneath the Town Lift Bridge.
Yeah, really try and get there around 4:45 so mm-hmm. you can kind of start to line up. Then they'll take off at 5, and it's been really fun to watch that evolve into more of a parade. We tried several years ago to start it at the post office, and it was just kind of like a disaster. And so starting it down there has been really fun. And we're also moving Nuzzles & Co. and Canines with the Cause down to Lower Main Street as well. So those who have their dogs with them can engage with those groups rather than kind of separating those two components.
So do you close Lower Main?
Yeah, so Main Street is closed. The entire street is closed. So we started that a couple years ago as well.
So about 5:30?
Until about 6 o'clock is when we really open things back up. We wait for the street to kind of organically clear up.
Okay. And so, Jenny, of course, we know this brings in a bunch of traffic from all over the county. I think even a lot of people from Salt Lake City now making it up. But the city council has approved paid parking for this day. Tell us what's happening.
So we do anticipate quite a few people coming out for the event, locals and visitors alike. And so we've really tried to make an initiative to help reduce traffic and congestion, specifically in the Old Town area. Therefore, we will be charging $10 per car in China Bridge. That is cash only. That will be taking place tomorrow from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. So just during the hours of the event. I would like to also thank all of our community partners, both the county as well as the resorts in the school district. They are all offering supplemental parking for free, of course, with free transit from those locations. If we see kind of an area where we have more more people showing up, then we will send out our trippers to make sure everybody gets picked up and brought over here to Main Street for the event. So it's really important if you are coming, please make sure that you do take transit if you can. If you're not planning on taking transit, then please carpool. I did also want to mention that the Upper Sandridge lot is going to be available for kind of drop and load. So if you need to swing up there and drop off your family while you go find parking, just that's the Upper Sandridge lot up on Marsac. And then also to mention, China Bridge entrance will be from Marsac only. Lower Swede and those lower garage entrances, Swede turns to one way only to help reduce traffic in the residentials and help pedestrians cross to Main Street. So it'll be one way north only from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Downhill. What we're talking about. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So for those who are in China Bridge before two, what happens? Do they stay or do they?
They stay.
Okay.
They stay there. If you leave after two and you need to come back, let's say at five, you will need to pay to park. But if you're already in there at 2 o'clock, you're fine. I also want to mention if you have a CB pass, then you can park in North Marsac or Gateway lot as normal for those pass holders there.
Okay.
And then also a quick mention, please slow down and do watch for children tomorrow. Whether you're coming to town or you're just out in residential neighbors, please take extra care. And then I wanted to mention we are doing a few extra fun things. The Public Art Advisory Board will be decorating the Old Town Transit Center, and council will be there to greet trick-or-treaters as they get off the bus and pass out some treats. Also, the Electric Express tomorrow is extra festive, and we will be turning that into the Frankenbus. That's a Frankenstein theme. And then, as always, Transit does, with their other buses, has some spooky videos and some simple decorations as well. So please come out and celebrate with us, and we look forward to it.
That should make it pretty easy on that electric bus. We'll see, right? I mean, right?
It should.
Coming every 10 minutes? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just do it.
All right. Okay, anything else people should know?
For any additional information, you can just go to historicparkcityutah.com, and we have this event on our events calendar with all of the details and information on access.
Okay.
And then if I can just mention as a reminder, you can always text PC Events to 888-777 for our text alert. We will be sending those out tomorrow regarding the road closures and other traffic and transportation information as well.
Okay. Jenny and Misha, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.